At last, the midterm elections are finally here. The polls open at 7 tomorrow morning. We've been hearing from the statewide and congressional candidates over these past weeks, but now let's dig into the election itself, the process, security, and GOP worries about voter fraud. Stateside held a live event at Zingerman's Gray Line last Thursday in Ann Arbor. And that's when I spoke with two guests who have a whole lot of election expertise. Chris Thomas was the director of the Michigan Bureau of Elections for 36 years. He served five administrations and four bosses from both political parties. He's now with the Bipartisan Policy Center. And Richard McClellan is a longtime election law attorney and a GOP mover and shaker. Take a listen to our conversation from last Thursday. So, Chris, the turnout next Tuesday, the buzz is it's going to be huge. There's certainly a lot of interest. So what do you think? What are you expecting in terms of turnout?
Well, I earlier this year indicated, I think, around 4 million. So 4 million would translate into about 54% of the registered voters. Now, typically, in a midterm election, we have 3.2 million, and that almost never varies. You can go back to 1998, it was 3.1, and in 2002, it was on the high side of 3.2. But then along came 2006, and that's the outlier, where we had 3.8 million. So 600,000 more voters in 2006 than in the other midterms. So now you jump to 2010, 2014, both right there at that 3.1, 3.2 turnout level and 3.2 million. So I'm expecting 4 million. And I said that several months ago based on a couple things. One was there's sort of this pent-up desire to vote. And we saw that in a primary. People came out. Typically, I wouldn't look at primaries to predict turnout for a general election, but what we saw in the primary were a huge increase of first-time voters who don't normally vote in primaries. So in Oakland County, it was like three times the number. Washtenaw County, it was seven or eight times the number. And then in certain counties like Oakland, who normally have 198,000 turnout, they had 320,000 people turn out. And a lot of them in those communities right along the border with Detroit. So I'm sensing there's a lot of millennials living in those jurisdictions. So
your Ferndales, your Hazel Parks.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And, you know, there's an open congressional seat going through there as well. So the interest is clearly evident. And of course, we have all the statewides are termed out, so all of the statewide offices are open this November. So looking at that and sort of the national tone, if you will, and people are impatiently waiting to cast their ballots. So with that, I thought, well, we'll top 2006, which was 1.8 million. And expect to be a couple hundred thousand above that.
And Dick, from where you sit and what you're hearing, does that all square away with what you're expecting?
I accept Chris's. He's been doing this for decades. But I look at it in terms of what the likely outcome is. And I have said probably two, 3 months ago, I think it's going to be a blue wave. I think a lot of these new voters are going to be Democrats. And I think the Republicans are going to be shocked by some of the seats they lose. We've been through these wave elections, you know, over the last 30 years, and I've been through some of them. Usually, a lot of times, when we pick the wrong presidential candidate, like Barry Goldwater, Republicans were almost wiped out. So there have been other wave elections, and I think this is going to be one of those, which might be good for Gretchen Whitmer, but most of the other Republicans that I would be for, I think statewide, I don't think many are going to win. And my congressman, Mike Bishop, he's got a very strong opponent against him, and that should be a solid Republican district. You know, if it's gerrymandered the way they say it is. Now, I think you might find out after the election, there's a lot of Democrats that win in those gerrymandered districts. Mm. So we shall see. But that's where I think it will be a huge turnout, and it will tend to go blue.
You're in the right city for saying that.
So Richard never loses his edge.
He does not. So this election, no more straight ticket voting this time around. Chris, how do you expect people to react to that? Could we see more spoiled ballots and longer lines?
It will be the first time, I think, in 127 years that straight party voting has not been on the ballot. The effect of that is going to be, it's not going to be a disaster, but it's going to be perhaps longer lines. If you can avoid going first thing in the morning, do that. Go later in the day. So it's going to take a little longer for people to mark the ballot. You're going to have people questioning, where is my straight party? Because it doesn't get through to everybody that that's been gone, given the complexity of the court cases and whatnot. So for the first time through, it's going to be kind of tough, and maybe it'll be the last time through for some foreseeable future. But I think there will be an impact.
And we saw, as you referred to in the primary, with big turnout catching people flat-footed in some cases, we saw counties running out of printed ballots and looking for printers, and then we have the wrong printer, and we had emergency ballot delivery. So do you have a sense how clerks are preparing to handle this Tuesday?
Yeah, under the rules, the clerks are required to print 100%. So we've got 7.4 million voters in the state, so there'll be at least 7.4 million ballots printed. So it's very unlikely that any ballot shortages are going to come up.
Final thing on the straight ticket, how might that affect those down ballot races, let's say the State Board of Education?
Well, I guess that's what we'll see. We don't really know. So roughly 50% of the voters use straight party voting. That's pretty standard across the state. In urban areas, it's higher. Part of the pitch was when they repealed it is that straight party voting discourages people from going to the nonpartisan section and the proposal section. Now, I think that there's always going to be a fall off in the nonpartisan because people don't know who they are. They're judges, right? Oftentimes running unopposed. School board candidates will be there, so that's a new race that's been put on. But when you get to the proposal ballot, in 2012 we had 5 issues on the ballot. 95% of the voters voted on those issues. In 2014, we had 2 issues on, and 93% voted on those issues. So Michigan voters, whether they're voting straight party or mixed ticket, filling in all the ovals, they know how to get to the proposal portion of the ballot.
There has been, we're going to shift gears here, a lot of talk, starting with President Trump, right after he was elected, about, air quotes here, voter fraud. Richard, what do you want to say about this specter of voter fraud in Michigan?
Well, Michigan is different as far as I can tell. I've been on the Republican, quote, ballot integrity team. They used to get a group of lawyers to do that. The others down here in Ann Arbor, they probably call it the voter suppression team. And we would have a very significant effort to make sure the ballots were run right. We had lawyers around. We would send people out to precincts. And what I found over the years is there's almost no voter fraud that we can ever. There are mistakes that are made. You know, some of the clerks make mistakes, and a lot of times we can help fix that. So voter fraud is not a problem. I represented a former citizen of Michigan, Kwame Kilpatrick, in his recount when he won for mayor. So I thought, well, this will be interesting. If there's any fraud, it's probably committed by him in Detroit. And we really went through very carefully all of the recounted every vote. And sure, you found a few glitches here and there, but clearly was no organized fraud going on either side. It's not a problem. It's another myth that Trump keeps hammering. You know, he has his own view of the world. It's not mine.
Chris Thomas, you want to add? Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
What do you want to add to that about the specter of voter fraud?
Well, fake views don't make real news. So, I mean, it just doesn't exist. I'm sorry. It just doesn't exist. I mean, it would be kind of cool if it did because we could all catch it and have big prosecutions and, you know, and everyone's conspiracy theories would be taken care of, but it doesn't exist. Does someone violate the law on occasion? Yes, that does happen. But these are individual acts, not concerted efforts.
So why is there so much concern and drumbeating about voter fraud, especially starting right at the top?
Well, I mean, it's a deterrent. It's a reason not to open up the system. It's a reason to basically undermine the system, and that's what it does. I mean, a lot of things that are going on today have that effect. Whether that's his intent or not, you know, I'll leave that to you all to decide. But the effect of all of this is to really undermine it for citizens out there. And it's also a great reason why you don't take any chances legislatively to have, get this, no reason absentee voting. You know, a very scary concept that 37 states have allowed people to cast a ballot before Election Day.
Let me flip to the other side of the fraud coin, and that is the voter suppression. And certainly we have all seen some big national headlines about questionable things being done to voter rolls in other states. And where are we in Michigan with this, Chris?
I don't find Michigan to be a big voter suppression state. My qualms with the legislature is that they just haven't gone far enough. I don't think they've gone per se out to be suppressing the vote. Our voter ID law, as it stands now, allows every person to vote. So even if you don't have an ID, you are entitled to cast that ballot. That counts that day. It's not a provisional ballot. So as long as they leave it there and they don't move to hard ID, which is in the hopper, I say okay. But when they start going to hard ID, now we start getting into the nitty-gritty of whether there's suppression. Now, suppression can show up in other ways. Now, these are not necessarily intentional suppressions, but if a jurisdiction consistently has long lines in their precincts where people are waiting over an hour and they haven't remedied that when it's been brought to their attention, well, they in fact are suppressing voters. Now, they may not get up in the morning with the intent of doing that, but the effect is just that.
Since the 2016 election, Americans have become tremendously and acutely enlightened as to the foreign interference in our election process. So, bottom line, how concerned are both of you about the security of Michigan's elections and our election machines?
Well, I think you all need not be overly concerned about that. And I think our role for national security is to show up and vote. That's the key, because what this has done is another way to seriously undermine the confidence of our system is by scaring people about hacking and all of that. So we heard of all this hacking. We know it occurred. We know they went into Illinois and they actually took some records. They didn't change any records. They didn't do anything. Well, everybody's on guard right now. Everybody understands this. There's been an incredible association between the Department of Homeland Security and the Secretaries of State and Boards of Elections that has never occurred before. So there is higher security in place now than we have ever had. The Department of State here, Bureau of Elections, has contracts with cybersecurity folks working with local units of government. At the end of the day, the boxes that you see in the polling places are not connected to the internet. They're standalone boxes. And you are marking a piece of paper. And so when we do a recount, as Richard referred to, we hand count those. We don't just turn the machine back on and run them through. We actually hand count them. So the audit trail that's there is the critical piece. We are not a touchscreen state. We are a paper state. And that's the ultimate security. And there's all kinds of other steps and checks and balances that really take care of this.
Dick, you've been involved, as you say, in election law for some 50 years. You care about elections. What do you say to someone when you encounter somebody that says, I don't vote. I don't think I'm going to vote.
It's
my vote. What do you
irritating.
Say?
you know, it is. I think we should have maximum participation. It is part of what I think is sort of a decline of general public support for what we have had is our democratic representative government system, where you go in every 2 years and you vote for a representative or a congressman or a state senator, and then they do the best they can, and if you don't like him, you throw him out. I think it's the best thing we've got. But I would rather have everybody participate, nobody be denied it. I wish the schools would teach better so the students understood the American system better. But it is somewhat troubling, the decline of voting. And I think we can only do so much with technology, with staffing, and so on. And I'm not worried about the Russians coming in and manipulating our system. The only place that I'd have any worry might be the voter information file, because it's in one computer and it's hackable. All the other, the actual voting places are spread all over the place and they're not connected, as far as I know. And I've done ballots in Bulgaria and in Nigeria. I've been a watcher, and so I've seen how it works in other jurisdictions. We do a pretty good job here.
Chris Thomas, longtime Michigan elections chief, and Richard McClellan, election attorney, Michigan Republican mover and shaker. It has been wonderful gleaning information from you for Election Day. Thank you for being with us on State.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.